In part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway piano showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Support for today's broadcast comes from the Prairie Ensemble, whose Heaven and Earth concert season begins Saturday, September 25th, with a program called Myths, featuring The Creation of the World by Darius Milhaud and Mozart's Jupiter Symphony. The concert starts at 7:30 p.m. at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. More information is available at 355-9077 or at prairieensemble.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for your regular host, David Inge. Our producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and our technical director, Henry Frayne, at the controls. And glad you're listening today. Here's a little pop quiz about the race for the U.S. Senate seat in Illinois being vacated by Peter Fitzgerald. How many candidates will be on the ballot on November 2nd? If you've been following the election news, even if you've been closely following the election news, you might be forgiven for thinking there will be only two candidates, Democrat Barack Obama and Republican Alan Keyes, when in fact voters in Illinois will see four names on the ballot in the U.S. Senate contest. This is not a trick question. It's just that unless the candidate is from a major party or has a blockbuster action film playing in theaters, that candidate will pretty much be ignored by the media. Here on Focus 580, we simply can't abide that. So we're doing everything we can to fill in the gaping hole in election coverage left by the rest of the press. We think the democratic process is best served when voters are informed about all the candidates. And anyone who subjects themselves to the process of running for office should receive at least their 15 minutes of fame. During this hour, Focus 580 will actually spend closer to 60 minutes with one of the four candidates for the U.S. Senate from Illinois. His name is Albert Franzen, and he is running as an independent candidate. You will see his name on the ballot in November, and during this hour, you'll have a chance to talk with him. We'll talk about his background, about his views on a number of issues, and we will invite you into the conversation. That's what this is all about. Part of the process is giving you a chance to talk with the candidates about the issues that concern you most, and that's what we'll do during this hour. If you would like to join us speak with Albert Franzen, all you need to do is call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. Toll free anywhere else you hear us, 800-222-9455, anytime during this hour. And Albert Franzen joins us this morning by telephone. Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, to begin, would you please tell us a bit about your background, who you are, and why you decided to run for the U.S. Senate?
Okay. Let me start out with that I'll be 56 tomorrow.
Oh, well, happy birthday tomorrow.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I was born in Aurora. I went to grade school and high school in Aurora. I graduated from East Aurora High School in 1966. I delivered newspapers, washed dishes, stocked groceries before I took a job with Illinois Bell in October of 1966. I was employed initially as a frame technician and then later a central office technician before I was drafted in the United States Army in April of 1968. Mm-hmm. I received an honorable discharge, and I attended college in a GI Bill while at the same time returning to work at the phone company, employed again as a central office technician. I earned an associate of science degree, graduated in the upper, about top 5% of my class. I became a union steward in 1974, a unit officer in 1976. I ran for and was elected to recording secretary treasurer in 1981, 1984, 1987. In 1990, I ran for president and business manager and was elected and again reelected in 1993. I led and participated in negotiations and conferences that pertained to my telecommunication workers. I retired in July of 96 to spend time with my family.
Oh, great. And so you had some experiences as a representative of the union, the president of the local, and so forth.
As it was, at the time I was president, it was the sixth largest IBEW local in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
We had 19 different contracts, Maritech, AT&T, Centel, Sprint. Those were our major contracts. We also represented central office installation people throughout the United States. I had people in almost every state in the union.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me, and thanks for that. That was a good summation of your experience and so forth. What made you decide to run for the Senate? I mean, when you decided to run for the Senate, what was your thinking in terms of the commitment and so forth? What led you to do that?
Well, there's a lot of issues I think that were twisting me about what's going on. Our trade policies really do not favor the American people. It seems like the only thing that counts in this country is corporations. And they're not even people. And it seems like all of our bills, all of our legislation is directed around corporations, and they're making money. And I see exorbitant profits. I see the Enron scandal, jobs being outsourced. We have a terrible situation. The war in Iraq was a pressing issue. I disagreed with our reasons for going there. I don't like the preemptive, unilateral position we took. I just didn't see anybody that was standing up and speaking out for the average citizen. It seems to me that most of our elected officials are representing the corporate structure as opposed to representing people. And I think if we continue down this path, we're going to bankrupt America.
So you decided to just run and see what you could do.
Well, actually, I was very upset about a lot of the issues. And I was looking for somebody to start talking about those issues, the trade deficit, our budget deficit, the war. Everybody wants to talk about, the Republican Party has an acronym for it. Now, that's pretty bad, to dissuade and distract the public. You have an acronym called GAG, which stands for guns, abortion, and gays. And out of nowhere, we come up with this, the sanctity of marriage thing. We had really big issues. I mean, we've had gays and civil ceremonies before, and now it's a hot button issue. It makes me crazy.
So basically you feel that our politics aren't addressing the real issues that they ought to be.
Well, I think what we're being bamboozled. They're waving these things that excite people's blood in front of us to distract us from the real major issues that are going to hurt us and our children and our grandchildren as the future comes.
Let me ask you to talk a little. Well, I want to talk about a bunch of issues with you, and I'm sure we'll have time to do that. I'm curious about the process that you had to go through to get on the ballot. Obviously, you had to gather, signatures on petitions and so forth. Do you have people? Do you have a campaign staff? How is it that you're able to
well,
get on?
Well, actually, I decided to run about the May-June timeframe after we invaded Iraq.
Okay,
and I investigated the procedure. I had a little bit of difficulty getting the correct forms. There's time limitations when you can first start soliciting signatures and when you have to end, and the numbers involved and the forms. Mm-hmm. It took me four attempts to get the correct form, which put me about a week and a half behind the original date that I could have started soliciting signatures.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, I had some other problems. I solicited signatures in, all over the state, actually. But I was at Northern Illinois University at a bus stop. And I basically was threatened with arrest for soliciting signatures at the bus stop. I was told I had to go to the public forum. Of course, nobody's there. So I had a little discussion with the police officer, But I realized that he was quite serious when another patrol car came up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a public bus stop. Come on.
Yeah.
So, at a state university. So, I had some problems. Of course, my family's helping me. Mm-hmm. I forgot to mention I have 8 children.
Okay.
I'm a widower, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons why I retired. So, I have friends throughout the state because of my connection with the union. A lot of the people I met, I traveled throughout the state, and I had a large geographic area to represent. And I made friends with the other telecommunication locals throughout the state, and I got some assistance from those people. And my local was merged with what used to be the Springfield local after I left. So I found some of those friends, and they've solicited signatures for me as well. But I've traveled downstate, been down to Alton, Peoria, Springfield, Decatur, Rockford, Joliet.
And you're familiar with the state of Illinois through past work with IBEW and so forth?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in that position, I was also in a position where I needed to go to Springfield, on a regular basis to talk to our state legislators. And in fact, I went to Washington several times to talk with our federal legislators.
Mm-hmm. Are you accepting campaign contributions? How are you funding your campaign?
That was a decision I made early on. I'm primarily upset with the greed of the major corporations. And so I really have not accepted any contributions from any corporations. And I have not accepted any contributions from individuals either. So I'm trying to keep under. There's a law about contributions out there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you collect over $5,000 or expend over $5,000, you have to file this onerous report. And basically, I'd have to hire an attorney and an accountant
mm-hmm.
to do it. So I'm trying to stay under the $5,000. I'm using the Internet to put out the word and word of mouth. And it seems to be working. A lot of people downstate have even said they've heard my name. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's working. And right now, I think it was unrealistic in the beginning. I read statistics. The average Senate seat costs, because in some cases, it's the guy with the most money that gets the job. But the average successful candidate spends $7.5 million to be elected to the United States Senate.
And, of course, most of that's television advertising and so forth.
Correct, but the problem becomes is where do they get $7.5 million? And if you spend that kind of money, it seems to me that the people that fronted that money expect something in return.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't believe that our country should operate that way. So I know it's a rough way to go, but that was my decision.
We're talking this morning with Albert Franzen. He's an independent candidate for the United States Senate in Illinois. He will be on the ballot on November 2nd. You will see his name there, along with 3 other candidates. You may have heard mostly about 2 of them, but we're talking with Albert Franzen this morning, and we welcome your questions for the candidate. If you'd like to join us, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us throughout the state, 800-222-9455. I mentioned during the introduction that the media has pretty much ignored anyone but the 2 major candidates. It's not quite true, though. I know you've done a couple of, I'm aware of at least 1 event right here in Champaign-Urbana. You were here a couple days ago for a town forum. Are you getting invited to a number of those kinds of events?
Yeah, I did a approximately a 20-minute interview on Channel 7 on their political forum on Sunday morning out of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, if I can get 10% in a poll. The League of Women Voters has invited me to participate in an October 21st debate with the other candidates. But that's subject to recognition by 10% of the people that they'd consider me as a candidate.
Right. The problem there's a threshold of awareness that it's hard to reach without media exposure. And if you don't meet that threshold, then you don't get further exposure.
Exactly. And the further problem is the when they run a poll, it's just, you know, a random poll. They, you know, it's possible they couldn't hit anybody that even heard my name.
Well, we have a caller to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. And although this is someone in Indiana, so they won't be able to vote for you, but let's see what's on their mind.
Okay.
Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello. I'm glad to see someone do this. Oftentimes, I consider myself an independent, though I normally vote Democratic. And I certainly understand the situations the unions are in and the rest that he talked about. And it's sort of like a voice of authenticity, which is a nice thing to hear now. Yes?
Thank you.
Okay. I'm sure you're going to ask him about some of his positions on things.
Absolutely.
Some of the things that he's already mentioned that, you know, is right in my back pocket, too. And I hope that he, you know, continues, you know, after this on further, because oftentimes people who, in a sense, don't have a snowball's chance in hell, so to speak, often bring up issues that the other groups will, you know, take over. And that's sort of a way to build some kind of meaningful group around you, is that that you are facing the issues and are speaking out and saying things. And the thing about money is it's one of the most difficult things for anybody, whether or not they're running or not running, is that the amount of money. Most corporations cover everybody just in case, and it's unfortunate that it's that way. It's nice to see somebody, you know, has got the guts and fortitude to try to buck the system that way, and I wish you all the luck.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Well, let's talk about some of the issues, since you know that's what we're here to do. You mentioned the problem of corporate control of our politics and maybe an overemphasis on, you know, serving corporations as opposed to serving people. I'm also aware of your history as someone active in the labor movement. Do you think that, I mean, are labor issues some of the most important to you?
Well, I think labor issues should be most important to everybody. Let's face it, everybody works for a living. You know, the majority of the population are employed for somebody and not necessarily self-employed. Small businesses also have a big problem, and I'm trying to address some of those issues for small business as well. But, yeah, I would say that in general, for the working guy. Our problems with the corporations, I think, quite frankly, the world has turned around in the last 20 years. We used to have regulations. Corporations were expected to be good, and they even professed it on their advertisements. We're a good corporate citizen, a good community business. You don't hear that anymore, and that's because they're not. In the year 2000, and I don't have my source, I don't think, 45% of corporations that have assets over $250 million paid no taxes. And last year, I got the numbers here someplace, the percentage is 60% of all corporations paid no taxes. You say, well, they're giving us jobs. You say, well, the fact is we're producing something for that. Let's not write off the value of the worker. And unfortunately, you know, workers are being dismissed. The corporations are screaming, we need a level playing field. That's why we're outsourcing. That's why we're going to these countries and paying people $5 a day to work for us. They say they can't compete on America's wages. Well, the American worker cannot compete on $5 a day. Right now, the median house in Illinois sells for $178,000. That takes two people's income if they make $12 an hour. I have four children that are just entering the labor market, and they're scratching to find a job that pays $8 an hour. It's it's absurd to think that the American worker can compete with foreign labor, especially in repressive governments where forced labor is not uncommon.
I want to follow up on that, but I will defer to another caller who's waiting patiently. Let's talk with them. Someone in Champaign on line number one. Good morning.
Well, good morning. I was delighted to hear you talking on the radio. I'm a refugee from South Dakota and also started to run on the independent ticket. And it is an exciting and interesting adventure, as I'm sure you have found. I would like somehow to let you know where my site is, because it's still up, even though I'm not a candidate. I'm, like I said, a refugee from South Dakota, which I think is probably the most corrupt state in the Union. And I think you might enjoy my site, though, because it supports everything you've said so far. So is there any way I can get that address to you?
Sure. What's the site address?
Oh, it's – oh, can I get it over there?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. MERLYNSCHUTTERLE.com. That's it. And and like I said, it's just a thing I put together for a lot of fun, and it was an interesting experience. I've ran before as an independent, and it's always interesting. I think people need to get in there and try this out, and they'll learn what this country is all about, I'm sure.
Well, thanks for I'll look at your website.
Oh, you'll love it, I think. Okay, goodbye.
Thanks for the call.
I'm sorry I can't vote for you because I'm, like I said, South Dakota. I'm going to med school here in Champaign, and I come out here all the time in the winter.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for the call. That's great to hear from you.
And while it's fresh in my mind, I always forget to mention my website.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's www.alfranzen.org.
Okay.
I have my pictures on there and various issues, and I'm trying to update it as I go. I'm a little pressed for time, but I've got a few things that I want to add to the site in addition, and I'll probably be updating that more regularly as the election draws near.
Okay. Yeah, and I meant to mention that as well. And by the way, we have a link to your site and all the candidate sites that we could possibly find on our own election webpage on the WILL site, which is simply will.uiuc.edu/election2004. So if you go there, you can find that link and others. So you mentioned we were talking before that last call about the labor situation and how Americans you're saying that Americans can't compete with foreign labor making $5 an hour. I would assume then that your views on
not $5 an hour. We're talking about
$5 a day. Yes, that's what I meant to say. Thank you. or even $5 an hour, but $5 a day, even worse. I imagine that you have some strong views about trade policy and would like to see some changes in that.
Absolutely. I think, NAFTA's been a bad thing for us in general. World Trade Organization is even worse. The Illinois Farm Bureau is awakening up to the reality. Right now, the World Trade Organization is saying that our farmers shouldn't receive any subsidies whatsoever, regardless, because it influences the world trade of commodities. I think that no foreign law or trade agreement should trump United States law. If our legislators see fit to put an embargo or a tariff on foreign-made goods, the World Trade Organization should not be able to trump that. And we've seen that happen several times since we've become a member of the World Trade Organization.
It seems that our elected leaders are widening trade agreements these days as opposed to actually looking critically at how those trade agreements are working.
Well, again, there was a great article in the Chicago Tribune, August 1st, 2004. It was a Sunday Perspective article.
Okay.
And the headline is, United States must do a better job of picking its friends. And the article basically alludes to one of the things that I believe causes terrorism. What we have is economically deprived people in countries that are dictated to by repressive, brutal, human rights-violating dictators. And we give these countries foreign aid. Certainly the people, you know, they have little recourse. These people, the countries that we're giving foreign aid to, and I can cite some, they arrest people for their political beliefs, for their religious beliefs. They force labor. It's amazing, and yet we give them billions of dollars in foreign aid. I mean, we can give these repressive governments billion-dollar foreign aid. Right now, the state of Illinois is, what, $1.3 billion in the red?
Mm-hmm.
Does the state of Illinois get military aid? Or you know, I think our money could be better spent.
We're a little past our half point here with our guest, Albert Franzen. He's an independent candidate for the United States Senate in Illinois. He will be on the ballot in November, as I've been mentioning, and we figured we should spend some time getting to know the candidate, and this is a chance for you to do that. If you'd like to join our conversation, your questions are welcome. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. I also, you mentioned earlier that you disagree with the decision to go to a war in Iraq, and I wondered if you could talk about your views on that particular subject, Iraq and the war on terrorism.
Well, I have to say that as the chief negotiator and the president of a labor union, a parallel I can draw is that one of the concepts in negotiations is you don't take your people on strike unless it's an absolute last resort. I mean, that's a declaration of war in a labor situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe we exhausted all of the available solutions prior to our unilateral invasion. I think we could have done a better job on that. And I question, now, I mean, we've heard, you know, how many different reasons why we went to war. Now, the final reason is to liberate the Iraqis. You know, weapons of mass destruction, nuclear arms, on and on. It just, the reasons changed as time went on. It's just totally absurd, I think, that we're there. I think we're really there because they were a threat to the Saudis, which is their neighbor. And I don't think it was a threat of invasion from the Iraqis. I think it was that the Iraqis might have been harboring some people that were supporting the overthrow of the Saudi government. U.S. News and World Report, about, I want to say 6 months ago, designated Saudi Arabia as one of the 10 worst dictatorships in the world. And it's an old regime. And the people in power are, you know, the head honcho there is close to dying. He's very old. So I think there's problems in Saudi that have caused us to be there, and our current administration is very friendly with the Saudis. Their ambassador is, they call him Bush. Bandar Bush is how he's referred to. So I think it's a very scary proposition. A lot of what's going on in that country has got to do with oil, Unocoal. I just looked at that. President Bush appointed a former aide to U.S. representative to Afghanistan. He was the American oil company, Unocal. as Special Envoy to Afghanistan. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but Unocal wanted to build a pipeline across to Afghanistan for the last 10 years. So, it just looks like this is about, again, big business and money. I think we're putting ourselves in a very dangerous situation here.
A lot of people have said that much of our foreign policy and the reasons that we have done certain things relate really to oil. Do you think that's the case?
Well, I think in this situation it is. It didn't help us. It didn't hurt that Halliburton is making lots of money over there as a coincidence. I believe Dick Cheney was a chief officer in that company. So, that's a little added plus, I guess, for corporations. But, yes, definitely, we're over there because of the oil. That's my opinion.
Okay. Speaking of oil, you have a statement on your website about energy policy. This is one of those big issues that seems very difficult to deal with, given all the money that's involved in pressure and lobbying and so forth, and the whole process of decision making in Congress. How would you address the energy policy of the nation?
Well, I'd like to see us reduce our dependence on foreign oil by supporting renewable alternatives such as ethanol, biodiesel, and a new fuel, relatively new. It's called E85. It's a biofuel, along with wind, solar, and geothermal energy sources. And I would also support efforts to develop a clean coal technology so that we can use Illinois' abundant natural resource.
You mentioned a number of things. Among them was not hydrogen. Do you have any hope for that as a source of energy?
I think hydrogen would be an excellent resource. I still think the technology is out there a few years, but I think that's an excellent resource. We have to be careful, I think, when we look at hydrogen because, of course, the water is a major component in making hydrogen. We're in the western part of this country is in a severe and drought conditions right now. A lot of the water is used 15, 16 times before it gets back into the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, I hold great hope for hydrogen, but I think we're a number of years away, and I think these are some of the immediate things we can do to reduce our dependence on foreign oil.
Let me just reintroduce our guest once again. We're talking this morning during this hour of Focus 580 with Albert Franzen. He's an independent candidate for the United States Senate in Illinois, and our lines are open if you'd like to join us. Your questions are welcome. All you have to do is call us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. In the meantime, I'll just keep firing away, and we'll cover a bunch of issues. I also wanted to ask you about healthcare policy, something that, has been on the minds of a lot of people and has been sort of intractable. How would you deal with healthcare policy?
Well, I think one of the major problems we have with healthcare is malpractice insurance. In Illinois, we're seeing doctors literally give up their practices, retire, or move out of state to practice medicine because of our malpractice. But I think it's not just in Illinois. I think it's something that's across the nation. Currently, we've got approximately 44 million citizens and small businesses that lack health care, and they're in no position to negotiate health care at less onerous rates, provided by health care plans, group rates.
Mm-hmm.
An example, my brother-in-law, he was between insurance policies. He had insurance, but he was between policies, so he needed a bypass. And he got billed. The bill came to their house. It was like $52,000. And they submitted it to the insurance company. And that bill was reduced to the insurance company to around $17,000, $18,000. Now, had my brother-in-law not had health insurance, they would have had to pay the full amount. And I think we need to address that kind of thing. I'm in favor of, and I'm need to be better versed on a single payer plan. But according to the National Center of Health Statistics, we could save $286 billion by going to a single payer plan. And that plan is a single payer plan that is in place right now is the Federal Employees Health Program. And that covers most of our government employees as well as members of Congress. I think that's the best solution. The other problem we have with health care is veterans' health care.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a promoter of veterans' health care. This is another thing that kind of pushed me over the edge. The current administration was, you know, trying to pump us up to back the war by saying, support our troops. And simultaneously, they were cutting veterans' benefits and closing VA hospitals. You know, they tell us we need to support our troops, and yet they cut the veterans' benefits. Another thing that is hurting Americans today is health care is no longer considered a something that you can get at work. A lot of companies don't provide it anymore, and if they do provide it, it's certainly not the way it used to be when the companies weren't outsourcing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What's happened is a lot of people that lost their health care insurance because they lost their job or the company they work for doesn't have it has more or less made the veterans' health care a health care of last resort and has put an additional burden on the health care, on the veterans' health care. And I'd like to see that. Currently, veterans' health care is considered discretionary funding. And I don't think our veterans should go begging. Additionally, what's important to note while we're talking about support our troops,
mm-hmm.
currently we have approximately 40,000 reserve troops in Iraq. And their health care only surrounds a couple of years around their military service. So, I mean, if they come up with some long-term thing, there could be a problem here. And, you know, nobody talks about that. The other thing that's interesting to note, of 28 industrialized nations, the United States is one, the only one of 28 that doesn't have some form of national health care.
Mm-hmm.
Iraq even had national health care, and now we provide it for them. I think we have to address this problem. I don't see why we can't.
We have about 15 minutes left with Albert Franzen. He's an independent candidate for the U.S. Senate from Illinois, and we have one caller waiting. We'll get right to them. Time for others if you'd like to join us in the few minutes remaining. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have a listener in Kankakee next on line number 4. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Jack Brighton and guest, United States Senate candidate Albert Franzen. Will you please enumerate the powers of Congress and discuss them and the power of the United States Senate to try impeachments and give advice to the President of the United States in his treaty-making power? Thank you.
Well, that one's caught me unprepared. Congress is supposed to help set trade policy. We can enact laws that the executive branch would have to administer. A lot of the president is given a lot of discretion in military in the military arena, and that's I think. You know, Congress needs to have a bigger voice in that. Because a lot of the money that leaves this country leaves as military aid. I cannot delineate the exact powers.
In terms of in terms of the powers of impeachment, I believe that's the House of Representatives that has to file articles of impeachment. If I'm wrong about that, somebody I'm sure will let me know. It's been a while since we dealt with that, although it seems like it's been a while, although it hasn't been that long. Anyway, let's continue on and take a caller next on line number one in Champaign County. Good morning.
Hello. I applaud your stance on alternative fuels, but I wanted to call in and at least say something about the fact that I don't think you have to worry about using up Midwestern water by producing hydrogen, because it's sort of steady state in that when you burn it, you get the water back. So maybe it'll change the climate a little bit, but probably no more than the infernal combustion engine already has. But I wanted to also go back to your statement about Iraq being a threat to Saudi Arabia. I think you pointed out then that it's been called one of the worst dictatorships. Saudi Arabia is actually in itself is a threat because it's a time bomb. It's probably going to explode, and I think it's more plausible to argue that the U.S. That's part of why the U.S. wants these four permanent bases that it's already built and has plans for seven more inside of Iraq. So I guess that's blame America first, but I think the people that in the oligarchy that are calling the shots right now are...
Well, it seemed odd to me that we attacked Iraq and 15 of the 19 terrorists were our Saudi citizens or nationals.
Yeah, well, it's it goes back to the fact that the attack Iraq plans were on the table from some time ago, and you don't have to be an apologist for Saddam Hussein to be critical of the group Coalition for a New American Century.
Yeah. Well, I'm not disagreeing that Saddam Hussein was a bad man in any way. I mean, he absolutely was, but go back to the original comment I made, U.S. must do a better job of picking its friends. Saddam Hussein was our friend. The Reagan-Bush administration supported him, and we gave him dual use, trucks and helicopters and
intelligence information, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, the worst crimes that they attack him for now were when we were allied with him, so with that government. So yeah, it's hard to believe they're still selling that. But I'd never heard this idea that that we were protecting the Saudi regime. We're not really protecting the Saudi regime. We're protecting what's underneath the Saudi regime, as usual.
Well, you should also note that the Saudis probably own 8 to 10% of our economy.
Well, I know they've invested a lot in fairly subtly in some ways. They've always been around to bail out W when he had his failing oil ventures like Harkin and the rest of it. I think actually the Netherlands and then Britain are more of the foreign investments if you look at it statistically. But
in Japan,
right. I don't know what the, I mean. It's easy to be nativist, I think, and I think that's the wrong approach too. I think the problem is more deep rooted than that. So anyway, well, good luck, have fun, and raise the issues. That's the main thing, I think.
Okay, thank you. I lost you for a second. I dropped my phone.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
In the time remaining, we just have about maybe 8 minutes left, and there are a few other issues that we could surely cover. One of those is education, and you have a statement on your website about the No Child Left Behind program and a number of other issues with regard to funding of education, and maybe we could talk about that.
Well, the big talk is No Child Left Behind. I believe that the current administration is using the No Child Left Behind Act to discredit our public school system and privatize schools. There are some people out there that think that we don't need a public school system and everybody should provide for the education of their children on their own. History shows us that doesn't work. We did not have a public school system until early 1900s. And if you go back to that time period, only the very rich received formal education, and we really can't afford that. We talk about being competitive in the world market. We cannot do that with uneducated masses. Our school systems are very good in general, but the No Child Left Behind Act provides for continuous improvement. Even the very best of schools cannot meet that standard. Mm-hmm. And then the poorer schools are subjected to paying for sending the children to alternative schools if they don't meet the standards. And that only puts an additional burden on the local property taxpayers. It appears to be a spiral down program. I think that if it was to work, they should provide incentives instead of sanctions. And it wasn't fully funded in the beginning. So that, again, puts additional financial burdens on the local school districts. And as you are well aware, many, many school districts in the state of Illinois just are running out of money trying to comply with federal mandates. I do not think our school systems need any more unfunded federal mandates.
Mm-hmm. In terms of funding for education, we are hearing, I think, in Illinois a little bit more conversation. I'm not sure where it's going exactly, because we've had this conversation in the past about the property tax being the main source of local school funding and the problems, the inequities that generally creates in funding between different schools and the impact that has on how children are educated or not. And I wonder what your thoughts are about school funding.
Well, I agree that there's great inequity in from school system to school system. Property tax in Illinois is onerous, and that's probably the best word I can choose. And probably 50%, if not more, of your property tax goes directly to schools. It's not a fair distribution. It's not of money to the schools. I believe that the dominant or predominant share of school funding should come from the federal government. And I think that we can fund it if we cut our military spending. And I'm not saying, let's put us at risk, but there are people in Washington that study this and say that we can cut substantial sums from, I believe we're spending $399 billion a year on defense spending. And we could cut that by a large amount and use that to fund schools. I don't think we need a Star Wars program. Cold War's over. We invest a lot of money in technology. And again, why are we investing the money in technology? It's enhancing the pockets of the big corporations again. I think if we're going to spend money on military, we need to be spending it on troops and a little less technology.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we spend more than all the other nations combined on military defense.
Mm-hmm. So the way to fund the schools will be to change the federal budget to favor the schools instead of the military.
Right, but I'm not saying that we weaken our position.
Sure.
I think it can be done without weakening our military position.
Mm-hmm. In terms of tax policy, would you like to see some other adjustments in terms of the way that the tax system is structured?
Well, the last tax cuts favored the very rich. Quite frankly, we're in a situation where I don't believe we can cut taxes. We've got a budget deficit that's close to $500 billion a year. We've got a trade deficit that's at $7.3 trillion. Those kinds of deficits, we're in the hole. We just cannot continue to spend. We need balanced budgets. But certainly, one of the things we need to do about taxes is have companies pay their fair share. As we started out this morning, 60% of corporations pay no taxes. They're using tax shelters, offshore tax shelters, to hide things. There's a term, transfer pricing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these multinationals will buy products from their own subsidiaries at greatly inflated prices, which gives them more tax breaks. And I don't have the paper in front of me, but I think we lost $53 billion in taxes. Here it is. It's an article that was in Sunday newspaper of the Daily Herald, July 4th, 2004. As much as $650 billion in profits may never face tax rolls. They're talking about the offshore tax shelters, no haven or no tax havens, such as the Cayman Islands. And further down, it talks about the transfer pricing, which is an additional $53 billion lost in taxes. In the Wall Street Journal on Sunday, July the 4th, there was an article on the Cayman Islands. They have a picture of this building. It's a small building, and it says this is the official address of 12,748 companies. One building, 12,748 companies.
It must be a big building.
No, it's not. It's not. It's a four-story building, and it looks like it's approximately 100 by 100.
Mm-hmm.
Firms from across the world dodge taxes in the Cayman Islands.
Well, we're about the point we're going to have to stop, I want to make sure that we mention your website again. If people want more information, it's www.alfranzen.org.
Right.
And is there any sort of final message you'd like to leave voters with as they think about who to vote for this November?
Well, I guess the one thing I want people to really think about is our foreign policy. And I want to think about our ability to compete. We're constantly being barraged by business saying that they need a level playing field to compete. And I think it's time we stand up to the corporations and say, hey, enough. You know, they're making record profits, and people are receiving less pay, less benefits. They're not paying taxes, and we're taking it on the beak. We're in this together. I believe in 8 hours of work for 8 hours of pay. But we certainly can't survive on third world wages.
Well, we're going to have to stop there. We're out of time. And thanks very much to you, Albert Franzen, for being with us. We will have this interview archived on our website. And as I mentioned before, you can also get more information about the candidate on his website, www.alfranzen.org. Mr. Franzen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Programming on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois.
That's it for this hour, Focus 580. When we return in just a few minutes, we'll be talking with Robert.